Welcome to a new episode of A Minute Till Six podcast. It's been a very, very long time, about a year and a half since we recorded, almost 2 years. For those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Mark Haynes. I'm somebody who's made many mistakes. I like to think that I've learned from them and most importantly, grown from them. And today, you know, I got a panel of some brilliant minds from all different walks of the world. We're going to be talking about the importance of mental health. And mental health is something that we all, you know, we all deal with, we all struggle with at times, even if we don't know it. But that's what we're here today to talk about. And I'm going to pass the mic to my other host of this show, Chris Perry.
Yo, 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 man. Welcome back, man. It's been a long time. Glad to be here, Chris Perry. For those that know me, for those that don't, we've been recording this Minute Till Six podcast for a minute now. And I'm glad to be back with these great guests that we have for today. So thank you for being here.
And next, I want to, it's always ladies first. We gentlemen around here. I got my girl all the way from Memphis, Tennessee, Miss J. Ariel. Welcome to the show, and let everybody know, you know, what you do, who you are, and all that good stuff.
Well, hey, y'all. So, yes, I am J. Ariel. So, I am a faith-based influencer. I'm also a Christian life coach outside of the social media space. And basically, you know, what I do is just try to spread as much good energy, positive energy, to as many people as possible through just, you know, sharing testimony, sharing personal experiences, you know, hopefully helping people see things from a different perspective and live a better life, experience life in a better way. And even, you know, not looking at the things they've been through as things that can hold them back, but instead things that propel them forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you for jumping on the show. Looking forward to what you got to talk about. I watch you all the time on your lives and stuff. You always got great things to say, doing great things out in this world. Then next we go pass it on to my guy, Gabriel. Gabe, the man with the X on the hat, man. Explain to everybody who you are and what you do, bro.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? My name is Gabriel Regalado, Dr. Gabriel Regalado. I'm a scholar and I'm a community organizer. And so I represent the American Council of Learned Societies as the Emerging Voices Postdoctoral Fellow over at Brown University in the Center for the Study of Slavery and Justice. But I'm also a community-based organizer with the Social Justice Learning Institute in Inglewood, California, where we, I focus on youth leadership development as well as legislative efforts to continuously decarcerate and decriminalize young folks, particularly Black and brown young men. The reason why that's my focus is because I am formerly incarcerated. I'm a former ward of the court through the juvenile justice system. And I pretty much dedicated, you know, most of my organizing efforts towards sort of, you know, working away at the circumstances and conditions in which young men like myself, right, you had to face to reduce the punitive sort of suffering that they had to endure in much the same way that I did when I was a young kid. And so that's why I wear the X hat. Obviously, Malcolm X was also formerly incarcerated and turned his life around when he joined the Nation of Islam and became, you know, a renowned human rights activist.
Thanks, Gabe, man. Oh, excuse me, man. I've been calling you Gabe, man. Thanks, Doc. You know, I appreciate you for being on here. And last but not least, we have big man from the Sacramento Kings, my guy, Rashawn Holmes. What's going on, bro? Let everybody know exactly who Rashawn Holmes is.
Like you said, Rashawn Holmes, play for the Sacramento Kings. I really do a lot in my community, really, with a lot of young men. especially a lot of young men who don't have opportunities like I had growing up, you know, really don't have the spotlight put on them or things of that sort, you know, just give them a chance to shine in their own ways and just put the spotlight on them. So I think for me, just helping underprivileged kids and, you know, people where I came from is something that's big for me. So that's really what I'm all about, you know, play basketball on the court and just, you know, try to do what I can in the community off of it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And now let's get to, you know, talking about mental health and growing through that and dealing with that, you know, and I'm going to start with you, Rashawn. You know, like you said, you do a lot of work in the community and things like that. Was mental health growing up, was mental health kind of something, you know, that was talked about in the community and in your community, like growing up, like, was that something that you heard of? For me, it wasn't a thing for me, even though obviously it's real, but it wasn't a thing for me at home.
Yeah, I think for me as well, I don't think mental health was something that was so much talked about in the community. But for me, I was blessed enough to grow up with the parents I had who, you know, every single day, you know, me and my brothers, we coming home and things of that sort, talking about things that we go through throughout the day or something that could have bothered us. And that kind of started real early in the household for me. And just looking back on it as an adult now, how important that was for my parents to just take their time out their day to, you know, just sit us down, you know, let us get things we had off our chest, let us express how we was feeling about things that was going on in the house or things that was going on outside. I think that's very important for everybody to have somebody to do that with, because even to this day, I still have my parents to go to. And I know a lot of young men in positions like that, especially coming from where I come from, who don't have that. And a lot of that they keep bottled up, a lot of that they, you know, running around in the neighborhood, you know, doing, you know, God knows what, things of that sort. So I just think, you know, having those people to go to and those people to run to in times when you really need them is very important.
And that's important thing, like you said, to have people to talk to and, you know, to run to, because, you know, growing up as, you know, young Black men, you know, it's kind of, you know, awkward to open up to a friend or whatever. So like, yeah, I have, you know, both parents in my household growing up. And then one thing I was kind of missing out on is just kind of that outside, you know, of the house, you know, love and people that care for you. And switching over to Gabe or Dr. Gabriel, excuse me. Like, what about for you? Like, was that something when you grew up, was that something that you kind of knew about or you was aware of? And if not, when did it become, you know, something that was a real thing to you?
Yeah, I think mental health was not only something that was not talked about or discussed in my household and in my sort of group of friends, it was also something that was stigmatized, right? Like, if you gave any note, you know, expressed any notion of being mentally unwell, right? And it was intergenerational, right? It was across the board. It wasn't just like, you know, your homies who would clown you if you start talking about your feelings a little too much. You know, it also be, you know, elders, right? And so, you know, like you, even if you were going through some kind of depression, some kind of anxiety, some kind of, just not being able to get right. let's leave it at that. You know, any notion of seeking professional sort of assistance or help for it, it was almost like a shameful thing. Not almost, it was a shameful thing. And in a lot of ways, even today, right? Now, folks, I think, you know, especially younger folks, Generation Z folks and younger millennials have done an incredible job of shifting the culture around mental health, normalizing seeking therapy and things of that nature, right? And having a therapist, and establishing the notion that just because you're talking to somebody doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It's just, you know, it's something just like if you want to take care of your body, you go to the gym, you want to take care of your mind, you go, you know, talk to a professional, sort of thing. But it's, the stigma is definitely still there. You know, I will admit, I still have not seen a therapist. I've been had insurance, right? To hit up a mental health practitioner, but it's definitely, I definitely attribute it to that longstanding stigma that to this day, I'm 32 years old, I still haven't gone and seen a therapist, right? And it's such a huge push to do it. But growing up, it definitely not only wasn't there, but it was clowned on, it was stigmatized, it was something to be ashamed of if you were mentally unwell.
I actually would echo that to some extent of what you said, Dr. Regalado. I see a lot of, like you said, the shift. You see a lot of people speak about protecting their peace now and things of that nature, and more yoga and more trips and traveling for peace and state of mind. You know, like you said, it was a stigma back then, but to see the shift happen now, after a lot of things like COVID, that took a huge toll on people mentally that nobody really talks about, I believe, that people aren't designed to be, you know, locked away from interaction for such a long period of time. So that affected a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And since then, a lot of actions that have happened can be attributed to that, but nobody's really speaking on that or actually, like, you know, getting data on those things. But just to see the amount of people since then that have switched gears and decided, hey, look, something's not right. You know, I'm not okay. Let me get help. Let me find things that bring me back to my core self. It's been a beautiful thing to see. So I've been enjoying it, and I'm one of them. I'm part of that push, that movement, that initiative of, hey, look, right now, me recentering myself, me finding my peace is top priority. Everything else kind of comes second right now. So definitely happy to be a part of this generation. We've experienced a lot of things in our time. If you look over histories, the amount of things that we've just experienced in our generation, I don't see too many generations that have experienced so many of the same things in such a short span. So definitely wild, definitely mind-numbing to some situations, and definitely important to find those relationships, find those friends, and find those things that recenter you.
And Ms. J. Ariel, I wanted to get your, you know, thoughts on that as well. You know, growing up in Memphis, is that something that, you know, you were aware of, you know, as a kid? And, you know, what, like now, you look at your social media and stuff or whatever, that's obviously what people got to judge you on. You're always so upbeat and pleasant, you know. Was it something that you were aware of, you know, when you was younger? And now, is it something you deal with?
So I think I can echo behind everyone else and say that growing up, like, mental health was not something discussed in my household. But at the same time, I think it was more so, I feel like the generation before us, mental health just wasn't a thing. So in my family, we did things that were good for mental health. Like Rashawn said, my parents asked me about, like, what's going on? How are you doing? You know, different things like that. They would ask. So they would open the door, and I didn't know at that time that was helping with mental health, but I did learn, you know, as you get older, and now we have our generation that are, you know, really keen into mental health, that, oh, those are things that are part of having a healthier mental state. And so growing up around where I'm from, so grew up outside of Memphis, so it was a little more countryer, so less of being exposed to a lot of, like, urban, I guess you would say, where it's a lot of, like, you know, shooting, gang violence, all that type of stuff. I wasn't really exposed to that until I got older. But as I was exposed to that and had friends that were from inside of Memphis, you started seeing how the people that didn't discuss mental health, how that, you know, to this day, like, they don't know how to have certain type of conversations. They don't know how to deal with anger. They don't know how to deal with frustration. And how it comes out is, you know, typically isolation, where it comes out in even more aggression. And so I think, for me, what I've learned is that the best way to deal with those types of things is just, you know, if you are aware of mental health, and good strategies is being able to open that door for people to just talk to and not be judged, and, you know, say, like, oh, I feel that, like, I can resonate with how you're feeling.
Right. Yeah. Cause that was like we all said, it was something that, you know, it was always there, but we weren't aware of it. And that was kind of like with the change of this podcast, like we usually just talk in sports or whatever, but it was something we wanted to do to where we could just open it up. Like, yeah, I'm no mental health expert. You know, I don't think we all are, like, but this something that, you know, conversation is always good. As long as we could talk about it, as long as we could, you know, kind of, you know, get therapy from each other, even if we aren't professionals or whatever, I think it's really good. And, you know, with going into that, you know, back to you, Rashawn, like being in the public eye, you know, 24/7, they see you on the court, they following you on social media. Like you said, the community and the youth is important to you. How important is it for you to show them your growth as a man outside of the court and just being transparent?
I think that's very important. You know, it's just so people can have something real, you know, because we all human and, you know, we all go through things. You know, we all have been in spots in our lives that wasn't the best or things we wish we could do better. And I just think it's important, you know, for the kids and especially for the youth to see like real examples. Like, yeah, I've been through things, you know, I've seen things, you know, things haven't always gone how I wanted. This is how I responded, or this is what I did to get help, or, you know, this is what I did in order to excel in this area, you know, because it's not going to be easy. And especially mentally, especially on the kids these days, like I said, without as many people, especially coming from where I come from, without as many people to run to, stuff can weigh on you, especially as you try to move forward and try to get better in life, and especially what you're trying to do. You know, people talk, you know, and, you know, your family members can talk, things of that sort. So I just think, for me, just setting that example and showing this is things you can get through, these are things, you know, you can have resources here to do this and that and the other. I just think that's important for them to see, and that's important for them to have. It's more tangible, I feel like.
And Doc, with, you know, going through your journey, you like you said earlier, you had, you know, felonies and stuff, and now you're a doctor. What was some things that you kind of turned to, you know, because obviously you had to be dealing with a lot in your head in those times, but what are some things you turned to or people or whatever, if there were people for you, to kind of get you going and on the right track?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's been a long journey, and it hasn't been easy. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, you know, since I made those mistakes when I was a kid, I haven't made any more mistakes, right? There have been new challenges, you know, in adulthood. To just clarify, right, I have an extensive felony record, strong arm robbery, weapons enhancement, even gang enhancement, even though I didn't gang bang, just because I lived in a particular neighborhood and I was seen, you know, with particular people. Those of you who are from California, you know about a gang database and gang enhancement, right? And gang injunctions. But that's a story for another day. All that means is that it don't matter if you gang bang or not. If you get caught up like wearing red shoelaces or wearing a LA Dodgers hat from a particular neighborhood, that means you're immediately or automatically, affiliated with a gang in the system and database out here in California. And that impacts your sentencing. So let's say you steal a candy bar, right? So you get caught up for, you know, petty theft, but on top of that charge, you also get a gang enhancement because you're in the database. So that's what that means. It's just another way of criminalizing Black and brown youth because, you know, God knows KKK and white supremacist gangs out here are not in the gang database. You know what I'm saying? And so it's definitely a racialized, thing in the state of California. But, I had a lot of help. I had incredible mentors that have come my way, both within the juvenile, when I was in juvenile hall, and outside of it. And when I was able to go to college, I was still a hard head, right? And, you know, you hear a lot about like Allen Iverson's story, right? how, you know, he got caught up in some stuff he didn't even do, but it was still difficult for him when he went into Georgetown. And he was still, you know, he was still a bit of a hardhead. But, you know, the late, great John Thompson took him under his wing. I definitely had my share of John Thompson figures come into my life. Even in when I went into college, you know, I had an ankle monitor on when I moved into the dorms, you know, for the first couple months that I was there. Mark knows this story. When I moved in, my roommate's dad, like, pulled him into the bathroom and had a conversation with him. He said, "You see that dude over there? That dude gonna be trouble." He said that kid over there with the ankle monitor, he gonna be trouble. Stay away from him. He ended up being one of my best friends, and I ended up being, you know, a groomsman for his wedding later on. And I gave the like speech at our graduation ceremony. And when I got off that stage, I went up to my roommate's dad and I was like, "Hey, what's going on? My name is Trouble." And it was like a full circle moment. But you know, he wasn't wrong. I was Trouble. I was Trouble coming in. But it was because I had, you know, mentors, professors, you know, folks that was really looking out for me and were able to identify value in me, despite everything that was problematic about me, because I definitely was, you know, had problematic ideas and was still very much behaving in problematic ways. Even when I got to college, there were folks that took me under their wing and was like, you know, this is how, you know, you can course correct. And without them, I definitely would not be here as Dr. Regalado, right? I would, you know, who knows where I would have been, but I wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't have been in the position that I'm in now. So mentorship was critical. And I have to acknowledge that not everybody has the privilege of encountering those mentors, right? Not everybody has the privilege of encountering a John Thompson type figure, or the, you know, the Professor Halisi's and Professor Abdullah's, who were my mentors in college.
Good deal, good deal. I'm actually taking it back to Rashawn real quick. Quick question, just along the same lines of what Mark mentioned about just being in that spotlight, being in the NBA. Can you speak a little bit about just the effect, the mental effect of things, being an NBA player, being in the spotlight, being drafted with expectations from family members, friends, and did you have some of those mentors that Dr. Regalado spoke about?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I think, first of all, just the pressure that comes with it, you know, it's immense, you know. And I think you look at a lot of guys that play in college, you know, and great players in college and things of that sort, and you wonder, you know, what happens when they get to the NBA even, or things of that. You know, a lot of it is not physical, you know, because being in the NBA is such a mental, you know, struggle. You know, 82 games, you're away from family, people talking about you, every move you make and things of that sort, it definitely weighs on you. It weighs on you. And I like I said, I really leaned on my family in that situation. You know, I'm blessed to have a family, you know, my dad, my mom, I got three older brothers and things of that sort. So those have always been my mentors, and I've always had that. And I've been blessed enough to have that. And, you know, I thank God for them every day, especially now as a grown man, you know, because for people who don't have that, it's a lot tougher. And it's hard. It can be hard to find an outlet or find somebody you're comfortable enough to talk to about situations like that. So it can definitely get very, very heavy, you know, very quick in the NBA. And I think just the conversations around mental health, especially in the NBA itself, different players coming forward, talking about resources, I think has been a great thing. And I think it's important to continue to do that, honestly.
Hey, Rashawn, like on that same note, how is it difficult to keep your, you know, mental health a priority as, you know, y'all on the road all the time, you got games every other night, you know, does it get hard at times, especially like, you know, being away from family? Is that difficult?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's really one of the hardest things to do, especially during the season, is to, you know, remember yourself. You know, they call it self-care, things of that sort. You know, it can get lost in the shuffle because you got weights, you got games coming up, you got interviews. And a lot of times you can just forget to just concentrate on yourself. And, you know, when I'm away from my family, you know, I think FaceTime is like the greatest thing ever invented, for real, because that saved me a lot. And, you know, the NBA done a great job also of just giving like mental health specialists to different teams. You know, every team has a mental health specialist that you're going through things. They travel with you on the road. You can have those conversations. So I think these conversations being opened up have definitely helped, led to a lot of more resources being available for people. And I think that's extremely important.
And Jay, what are some things that kind of, you know, promoted growth in your life when you focused on, you know, your mental well-being and things like that?
I believe just the people I surrounded myself with, that was one of the biggest things that promoted, you know, me being a more mentally healthy person. Like, if you don't have people who understand that your mental health is a priority, then they're gonna, you know, force certain type of opinions on you and different things like that. They're not gonna respect your space. So I say, if you do need some time, you know, to think through things or some time to get away, or, you know, if they can't respect that, or if they feel like, you know, you're acting funny or, you know, whatever it is, having a good support system that can help you through those times. I know for me, like when I was in college, I played basketball as well, but whenever I dealt with some of the things from like injury, from being far from my parents, different stuff like that, if it weren't for the type of people I had around me that were supportive in those moments, in those times, then it probably would have gotten worse way quicker. But instead I had good, positive people that I was able to talk through those situations with that were able to encourage me. Same as, you know, transitioning into like full on adulthood, you know, like you said, our generation has gone through so much, like pandemic, you know, just all kind of crazy stuff. So having people that you can be like, girl, like today is a terrible day, or dang, like, you know, I don't know what I'm gonna do with myself. Like during the pandemic, for like the first like 6 months, I thought I was gonna go insane. Cause I'm like, I have never been shut up in a room to myself for this long ever. And so being able to kind of like look at myself in the mirror, being able to really say, okay, so let me figure out how to spend time with myself. And whenever I was able to reflect on that with other people, and they were like, girl, like I felt the same way. Like, I feel you. Like I had some of those same revelations or those same moments. So I definitely feel like who you surround yourself with is a major thing, but I also think, you know, being able to realize that, you know, ain't nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you if you're not in a good mental space. It's a part of life, and being able to figure out, okay, so I'm not having a good day today, so how do I bounce back from this, or who can I reach out to as a resource?
And there's like, you know, like we all tie mental health into like having bad days, but I don't know about you guys, but there's been like times with me where, you know, I'm actually having a good day, you know, but I'm still kind of feeling down or whatever. And, you know, if I don't know if any of y'all dealt with it, Jassy, you shake your head. So I'm gonna pick on you with this question or whatever. What do you do, or, you know, how do you maneuver in that situation when you know, you had a good day, you know, you might've talked to somebody that you really missed, or you heard good things or whatever, made some money, who knows, but you still kind of feel down. Like, how do you acknowledge that situation?
For me, I've always been a root issue type of person. So I feel as if when can you hear me?
All right, yeah, there you go. I lost you for a second.
Okay. Like I was saying, I feel like on those type of days where, like you said, all of the circumstances of the day, the situations that you've been in have all been positive, you know, there's technically not a reason for you to feel the way you feel, and you still aren't in the best, you know, mental space. I think that's where you start trying to address like those root issues, those root things, you know, like why am I not feeling good today? You know, what part of me is not, you know, in a good space today? Cause, you know, it could be literally anything. I know, like, as a woman, you know, men seem to think we kind of crazy sometimes, but as a woman, you do have a lot of those different things. So you have to kind of figure out, for some people, it could actually be a hormonal imbalance. Like, and that's why it could be a perfectly great day and you're not feeling it. For other people, it could be something that you don't know is lingering, you know, in the back of your mind, you know, so being able to go through and kind of filter through, like, what's going on? What have I not addressed as an individual? It could be a great day, but did I deal with, you know, a situation maybe with my parents or with someone that I really care about that, you know, being on the best of terms right now, And so that's just lingering in the back of your mind. So I think taking time to reflect, reflections are super important to me. You know, like journaling, all that different stuff, because whenever you're able to sit back and kind of address and filter through, okay, so what is my life in this current state? Like, what are my relationships looking like? What is my physical health looking like? What, you know, because all of those things tie in together. I mean, we're holistic beings. So everything kind of needs to be firing on all cylinders in order for you to feel, you know, at your best.
Nice, nice. Dr. Regalado, one question for you. After you had your previous incidents as a youth, correct? Where did the transformation happen? Where did it change for you? And after the change, what did you experience from the people around you? Typically, I know what I've encountered. You know, you make a change, or excuse me, you have a mistake or an incident, and after you've made, you tend to, everybody kind of changed around you, you know what I'm saying? So even though you change your life around, they still see you in the same light. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I would say, right, so I was 17 when I was incarcerated, and I'm 32 now. I would definitely say that there isn't a cataclysmic sort of moment of change, or there wasn't one. I would say that the change is ongoing. It's an ongoing process of change and growth. I've definitely encountered many challenges since then, right? I've gone through a divorce, child custody trials, immigration, you know, court trials, you know, many things that were impacted by, you know, my juvenile arrest. But all things that I was able to fight through and win, every single one of them. And so it's an ongoing process of change. I will say that there was a mindset shift when, I hope this isn't an oversimplification, when people started treating me like I was smart. Because when I got locked up, all I could do was write. And people started reading my writing, right? And when people started reading my writing and started giving from like the guards to the warden of the, of the juvenile hall to the judge, when they started saying stuff like, what is a smart kid like you doing in this situation, right? I had never heard anything like that before, right? But once I started to get that kind of feedback, I started to realize that there were other things that I could do, right? I started to realize that. And believe it or not, I had never received that feedback, not even from my high school teachers, right? Who obviously I did writing assignments for, who I was able to demonstrate, you know, my intellect to. But when that happened, that took me to a whole nother level, right? And yeah, I would say that it was there when there were people who were able to, again, identify value in me, to view me from what we call an anti-deficit framework, right? All too often, teachers, parents, and older folks tend to look at kids and younger folks with a deficit sort of framework, right? They're below, you know, reading level for their grade. They can't do this, they can't do that, right? That's sort of the typical view on youth, and especially because with parents, because we want our children to, or we always say that the children are a reflection of us, and we want them to represent us in the best way. And so, but a lot of times that feedback that's received by young folks is that kind of deficit emphasis, what we don't have, what we're not doing, what we haven't developed yet. But once I started to get feedback from an anti-deficit sort of perspective of what I did have, what I did, you know, what was valuable and what was useful, you know, that definitely, you know, kept me away. It was almost like an inoculation of preventing me from doing anything else too stupid, right, from that point moving forward.
And Rashawn, you know, like athletes get looked at like y'all have the perfect life. Y'all, you know, make a ton of money, you travel the world, you playing, you know, the sport you love. Has there been times where you haven't been okay? And it's just, you know, you wasn't able to kind of really show that. You had to just kind of keep going with the flow.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we go through a lot of things behind closed doors, you know, and I think for me, that's always been important, you know, to just keep it pushing and just try to accomplish the things you need to accomplish. But I see that happen to a lot of people, you know, just to get kind of like lost in that everyday shuffle where you're working. Oh, okay, well, I don't feel that great. Okay, let me work some more. Let me work harder. And that's how I'm thinking about this. This is kind of wearing on me, but let me work harder. And I think as athletes, especially, it's a lot easier to get lost in that because you got access to gyms and things of that sort. So you can kind of just put it all into the work. And I think, you know, a lot of people get to a point later, you know, you do that for so long and then you just get to a point where it's like, man, I can't go on no more. I got to take some time off. I got to take some games off. Or, man, I need to take, let me just chill for this year or something. Or you can't get your performance right on the court or things of that sort. Because I see a lot of people kind of just hit that wall, you know, where, you know, they haven't been doing any maintenance on themselves. That's what, you know, I've been going to therapy lately. That's what my therapist calls it, is just kind of just maintenance, you know, doing maintenance on yourself, whether you feel like you feel great or you don't feel that great that day. Just continue to do like just maintenance every day, kind of just keep yourself in that right headspace. So I think not getting lost in the shuffle like that is could be very important, but it's also very hard to do. And you kind of just need somebody to get you out of that.
And like you say, you're seeing therapists and things like that. Like, how have you noticed a change in your life, you know, whether it's on the court or off the court? How have you noticed, you know, going to therapy has helped you?
Man, I just really the best way I can describe it is just you feel lighter, you know, just you have somebody you can just kind of get everything off your chest, really, you know, there's no bias or things of that sort. And for me, I'm not really a build-up person. I don't like to let things build up. I kind of just, you know, like to keep myself feeling good on the daily. And I think as I've been going to therapy, the main thing I've noticed is just the light feeling I have throughout the day. You know, if I'm feeling something or something is weighing on me, I can set up a therapy session and, you know, I can get myself feeling better. You know, that's a tool that I've come to find out that really, really helps me just stay in the right headspace. And so I think just getting a rhythm and routine with that has the last couple of years has done wonders for me in my personal life as well as on the basketball court.
And then Jay, I got about one more question maybe for all y'all, and then I'll let y'all get out of here. But I appreciate, you know, I want to say this now. I appreciate every single one of you for jumping on, you know, with us today, and, you know, opening up and having this conversation. Because like everybody said, these conversations can be difficult. They have been difficult for me in the past. So this is definitely out of my normal comfort zone. So I want to thank all of y'all for, you know, doing this with me, because this is, like I said, I haven't seen a therapist, but this is therapy for me. I'm really taking notes on, you know, what you guys are saying, and I admire y'all approach with this. And, you know, I want to be big on, or I am big on, like, growing. You know, I have, you know, two kids and stuff, and I'm somebody who, you know, looking back on my past, like I've made earlier, like I said, I made plenty of mistakes. But how would you guys, we'll start with Jay. But I want all of you guys to answer this question. How would you guys say the mistakes you made, you know, during a bad, you know, mental space, have you been able to use those situations to help you grow and move forward?
I can say 100% yes. I know there's been a lot of, most of my bad decisions were from a bad mental space, if not all. So for me, I've always been a type of person, I guess it was the way I grew up, where the mistakes are not what define you. It's basically how you get back up from them. And so I've always been the type of person that, you know, whatever mistake I make, as long as I bounce back from it the right way, you know, whether it be getting it right with a person that I may have offended or wronged, or if it's just getting myself together, like if I did something that affected me negatively, I should take just as much pride in getting it right with myself as I would getting it right with the next individual. So just making sure that I bounce back from that, I think that also helps you create, you know, more mental stability, because you're not beating yourself up about a mistake you made, because it's not a mistake isn't permanent. And even if there are some permanent consequences, again, it doesn't define you. So just using those things to be able to build on top of, because for me, I'm a firm believer also in like using your testimony to witness to people in a way, like Dr. Regalado has shared with us, like, you know, there's a lot of young men and young women that can benefit from hearing that, to see where he is now and know where he came from. So I'm a firm believer in that. You know, if you share your story with people, you don't know what lives you can change, because I'm pretty sure most of us on here, we've heard somebody that was in a position that we probably felt like there's no way. Or, you know, even us personally, there's some things we've been through that at that time, in that moment, we felt like there was no way we were going to, you know, be able to bounce back from that, or, you know, make something good come from it. But here we are today, and we have made, you know, good decisions since then. We have bounced back from it. We've done even greater than that. And sometimes it may even be, you know, a shadow of a thought now. And then if we think about it, like, dang, I forgot, you know, that even happened like that. So that's kind of how I think about things and approach things and kind of move forward from mistakes I've made.
Gabe, what about you, Dr. Regalado? Excuse me, I keep calling you Gabe, Dr. Regalado.
It's all good, man. I mean, you've been on me since we was acting a fool in the back of the limo at Jelani's wedding, so you get a free pass. And I think to expand on what was asked of me previously by Chris about like perceptions of me since, right? I made the mistake that I did back when I was, you know, way back when, you know, it's a part of my story, and it's not something that I try to hide or erase. It's the fact of the matter is I wouldn't be here had that not happened. Right. You know, I think where I'm at and where I'm continuing to go is part of the journey of what we call post-traumatic growth. Right. You know, and that's, you know, and that's all we want for young, you know, men and women who've been through something like I've been through, right? The opportunity to not only grow from it, but to, you know, basically convert the experience into an asset, right? Towards whatever positive growth cycle you're trying to pursue. So, you know, I don't try to, you know, I always, you know, talk about, yes, I teach college level courses. I've taught at Berkeley. You know, I'm at Brown now, but I've also done some gangster shit. Like, excuse my language, right? That's all a part of who I am. It's, you know, and that's the complete picture of who I am. And much love, right, to those who embrace that, who embrace all of that. You know, I always talk about how, going back to the X Hat reference, you can't love Brother Minister Malcolm without loving Detroit Red. You know, you can't love El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz and, you know, where he eventually got to, you know, in terms of his spirituality, without also embracing that part of his story when he was a hustler and a pimp, right? And when he was doing some gangster stuff, right? Like, that's part of the complete story. And for me, how I deal with my mental, you know, moving forward, I remember there was an interview with BJ Armstrong a couple years ago that really resonated with me. He talked about how whenever he asked Michael Jordan what the score was, he didn't look at the scoreboard. He always said the score is 0-0. The score is always 0-0, right? Meaning no matter how many points you are actually up by or down by, right, you approach every possession, right? And obviously he's talking about basketball, but it's very applicable to life as well, right? Every day, no matter how, what, you know, victories you've won or losses you've suffered, right? What's important is that you're anchored in living in the moment and recognizing the value of each possession every day, right? that you could be up 20 points, you could be down 20 points, but you value, you know, each possession just the same, right? Because that's where you need to be at, right? And like I've been saying, you know, it's not like there was this cataclysmic moment for me where things just completely shifted. Now, it's been an ongoing process of growth, right? I have different challenges now. Back then, my challenges was, you know, gangs and, you know, running from the police and, you know, dealing with my record. Now my challenges are getting my kids ready for middle school. That's a big challenge too, you know? I take it with that same approach. The score is always 0-0. You know, don't let your victories go to your head and don't let your losses go to your heart, right? And so, you know, that goes into a lot of what Kobe used to talk about too, about being anchored, right, in who you are, right? Being anchored in your approach to the game, but also in your approach to how you live life, right? And so, but thank you, Mark, thank you, Chris, and everybody else on the panel for listening to me and having me on here, sharing space.
Absolutely, absolutely. Brashawn, I don't know if you, the same question, same, along the same lines, if you want to go ahead and answer it as well.
Most definitely. I think the mistakes, I always learning from mistakes was something my dad always said was the measure of a man, honestly. You know, how you respond to mistakes and, you know, learn from them. And I think that's something I've always taken pride in, especially as I got older, is never making the same mistake twice, is what I say. Never try to make the same mistake twice. And I think just going forward, it's important to realize that you're human and mistakes are going to happen. Like, it's inevitable. And I know it's, if you're a person like me, it's hard not to beat yourself up when you do make that mistake. And, you know, you can think about one mistake that you made weeks ago for years. You know, that's something that I would do. And I just think just understanding that it's not about the mistake itself, but how you respond to it is a great way just to go forward in life. And it's something that has always helped me, whether it's basketball related situation, life situation, just understand and never make the same mistake twice and always learn. Always learn from every mistake you make so you can get better in life and get done what you need to get done.
For sure, for sure. Like, again, guys, like, one thing I'm big about is saying thank you. So I'm going to say thank you again for joining me and Chris on this journey and talking about, you know, mental health being the first episode of this season. I can't express how much I appreciate you guys. Like, everything you guys said, you know, I'm usually a guy, like, when I do my sports podcast, I don't replay it. I don't really go over it much or whatever, but this is something that I'm gonna go over and over again, because you guys dropped a lot of jewels and I've learned a lot just from speaking with you guys in this last, you know, 45 minutes or so. And like I started this pod, I said, I'm somebody who's made many mistakes and I own up to my mistakes. I learn from them and I try to grow from them, and I'm going to make more mistakes just like we all probably will. And, you know, as long as we keep growing, you know, that's the beautiful thing about life. And Chris, I don't know if you got anything you want to say before we get out of here.
Yes, I'm going to follow that same train, man. Thank everyone for being on here today and sharing stories. Backgrounds and intellect. I've done a lot of things in my life. I've been accused of things in my life, and I've been blessed to outlive all lies, all you know, things that were sent my way. Outlived them by just integrity and priding myself on actions, right? So I'm very happy to still be here today, and I'm very big on experience. There's no greater teacher than experience. And so that's why it's important that people share what they've been through, what they've experienced for the next person to help them through and along the way. So thank you guys for being here. Thank you for sharing.
And before we get out of here, start with Jay. Can you tell everybody where they could find you, where they could look you up and see what all you're doing?
Yeah, so my Instagram is Jay Ariel, so J.AERIELLE. My podcast is BTS Walking by Faith. That's on Spotify, iTunes, and on YouTube. We have a visual component as well. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And Doctor?
Yeah, I really only got Instagram, and so that's GABO.REGALADO. That's pretty much it. That's my Instagram. Regalado.
And they can find you at Brown University. And Rashawn, big man.
And the social.
Rashawn, big man, Sacramento Kings. Where can they find you if they ain't already found you?
Oh, yeah. Instagram, Twitter, the same. Rich_Holmes22. Also got apparel, you know, HSH Management on Instagram or HSHManagement.com. Got all types of apparel on there and things of that sort. So, yeah, I'm around.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Stay 20 tuned. I see.
Yes, sir.
And once again, you got, Chris, you know, what's your Instagram and everything, man? We ain't did this in a while.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's been a minute. Mine is Chris.Perry, SR, Chris.Perry Senior. You can find me Instagram, Twitter. I'm not really on Twitter. I'm just starting back to Twitter. But you can find me on there, same name. But should be at the bottom of your screen as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then, like, if you guys know me, if you don't know me, I'm Mark Haynes. You can find me at Mark Haynes NBA on Twitter, Instagram, I think everything. So once again, this is a Minute Till Six podcast. We talked about mental health. I hope you guys learned something. I sure did. And I'm going to let all these good people get out of here. The next time you see us, you'll see a better version. And we're going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to be better people. And hopefully we all reach the goals that we want to reach. And you know, make the man above proud of us. And go check out now. This is a Minute Till Six. One of your hosts, Mark Haynes, and we out.